Hello, everybody. Jim Hackett and Pete Davidson, your fantasy football guys here at WEI, back in studio Friday, the 20th of April. And we are now less than 1 week away from the NFL draft. We got into kind of a large conversation there last week, Pete, like a general conversation, a lot of paths, a lot of quarterbacks. But now we're going to do a little bit deep dive on the quarterback position, which is a fruitful one at this, the 2018 NFL draft. I know you agree with me on that.
Yeah, I think it's the best QB class we've seen in a long time in terms of the entire class. I mean, I think the first-round talent is above normal for sure, but I also think that the depth of this class is pretty impressive.
Yeah, so that's what people. I think that's what people are missing. They're focused on the names that we've heard, you know, since, gee whiz, I'd say like December of last year, Darnold, Mayfield, yeah. Jackson, Rosen, Allen. Those are the guys you've been hearing about. But based on your recent research or the collective research, it looks like it's a lot deeper class than people might be forecasting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes at least, you know, 10 or 11 deep in terms of guys who have like a legit shot at being a pro. Mm. You know, I think depending on who you talk to, you might even add another name or two on there. But, you know, I've got it broken down into tiers. And even when you get into my fifth tier, I mean, these are guys with good film, nice talent.
Yeah.
So, I'm really excited about this class. I'm excited to watch them play over time and see how many of them make it. But this is, and by the way, this is something you and I talked about all the way going back into the fall when the whole Garoppolo thing dropped. But, you know, whether it's luck or skill, the Patriots have chosen a pretty good time to need a quarterback.
Yeah, they have. And the thing is, and we talked about it off-site, we'll get into it a little bit here, but off-mic, I should say, but, you know, the need has been there for the Patriots since the Garoppolo trade, okay? And Belichick kind of isolated himself specifically from being in this situation, and yet they find themselves in it. And then if you believe any of the smoke that's been, you know, lurking around Schefter's appearance on Kirk and Callahan earlier in the week, that, you know, he hasn't yet, you know, declared that he's, you know, coming to camp. I think a lot of people, present company included, that being me, got their knickers in a knot over it. But he's never really declared his arrival anyway. But I do think that one thing that's changed since a couple years ago when we've sat in the studio and we're talking about it, you know, I think 2 years ago we said, what's your over-under? And I said three, and you went under. And I said, I'm a push at 3 years. I think 3 years is actually looking like a push to get there now, because he looks like he's year to year to me at best. Getting a lot of pressure domestically, I'm sure. And, you know, given all the BS that's been surrounding the Patriots offseason, I think it's, you know, in the Tom versus Time stuff, it's lingering and looking shorter than it was. So more than ever, this quarterback class seems important, you know?
His wife is worldly wise, and, you know, they've got a lot of money and they have a lot to live for. So, you know, if I'm Giselle, I don't want Tom playing football either. I mean, that's just sound, rational thought when you get down to it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Patriot fans, they don't want to hear that. But, you know, if you were filthy rich, and they are, you know, the only thing Brady's playing for at this point is love of the game. And I'm sure his love for his family is probably right there with the love for the game. So it's obviously, when you're one of the greatest of all time, it's tough to walk away if you think you can still play at all. But, you know, for those of us who remember the way Montana's career ended and the way Aikman's career ended, they're, you know, riding off into the sunset with your faculties and your game intact is not so bad.
It's a nice way to go. Look at Roger Staubach did it. You know what I mean? He's had a long, blessed life, that guy. He's done it the right way.
Remember when people called Barry Sanders stupid?
Yeah, it's just stupid now.
You don't hear people
now.
Saying that much anymore, do you?
No. Although
Barry might have been a little ahead of the curve.
Although here in Boston, we do hear Barry Sanders a lot talking about how he used Cordell and Cordell's law office for his divorce. You hear him all. So he didn't make every decision right, but he made a good decision right about his football career and keeping his noggin healthy.
I think Brady, I'd be shocked if he didn't play this year, and that would be a huge sucker punch to the organization and the fan base. I just don't see Brady doing that.
Yeah, to me as a fan, it would be an unforgivable offense by him. It would be. You cannot leave that organization laying in the lurch.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, if you take the Garoppolo thing out of the mix, no problem.
Yep.
But if he did lean in to sort of push Garoppolo out and then quit himself, that's Wow.
Unforgivable. I mean, that is unforgivable.
I hope somebody on Tom's side of this equation is giving him good advice, like, you know, Tommy,
can't
do this every time Garoppolo throws a touchdown pass, people are going to be dissing you. You know, like, you don't want that. I think one more good year out of Brady, and he's fine. And I have confidence in the organization that they're going to draft one of these quarterbacks. And the good news for them is there's a nice handful of guys where if you give them a year or so of learning, they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and the other part, the good news for you and I and for everyone listening to this podcast and our show is I think everyone's in play. Like the NFL Draft 2018 is in play for the Patriots. It hasn't been in play very often, and I think they're in play from the top of the quarterback list all the way to the bottom, and that's what's going to make it really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're in play for the number one pick, but I think I don't know if there's necessarily any one quarterback who can't slide. So I don't know if any one particular quarterback, with, I guess the exception of probably Darnold, who doesn't seem like he could get out of a top three. It seems like some way he's going to be in the top two or three, no matter what.
I agree. I mean, I would put Mayfield there as well, and theoretically.
Well, I would, but yeah. I think you know Mayfield's just over 6 foot quarterback, and
that's true.
If he goes in the top three, that'll be the first time in league history that a short quarterback has gone that high. So, you know, I think you can make. You can make good arguments for why Rosen could slide, or why Allen could slide, why Jackson could slide, and Mayfield, I think, as well. Now, I'm not saying that these arguments are arguments that I would make. I'm just judging NFL history and how these teams get skittish.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers slid. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen this many times. And the guy I think who could do a Rodgers slide is Rosen. And again, you know, what did Rodgers go, 17 or something like that? I don't know. But, you know, obviously it's not a slight for a quarterback to go into the middle of the first round. But a Big Ben, if I'm not mistaken, was 10 or 11. You know, so the bottom line is you've got probably six guys that I have either round one or fringe round one grades on. And the way contracts work these days, if you're a fringe round one guy, you probably end up going late round one.
And you know what's interesting too, Pete, is all that's spot on. But what's interesting to me is when the media wave gets behind something, you know. So you and I last week talked a little bit about Mason Rudolph, and he seems to be climbing a little. And now we're talking about Josh Rosen, who, if you like listen nationally or look around nationally, his stock does seem to be tumbling just a tad. But it's amazing what the wave does come draft day, like the emotions of it. It's almost like Wall Street. Like, you know, like some bad news hits and then things just plummet. It'd be interesting to see how far he does drop and how sober people are when it's time to pick him up, you know?
And sometimes it has absolutely nothing to do with the wave. It's just that the so-called experts didn't have what the NFL was thinking correctly.
Mm.
You know, I think for the most part, when the draft shakes out, that's pretty much the way it was always going to shake out. I mean, I don't think there's many teams that listen to the media in terms of like who to pick in the draft. I mean, obviously, any team that does is
they're
going to have a rough time of it. That's not the way to do it.
Yep.
But the Rosen thing is compelling in that he doesn't seem to be slipping for any football reasons. It seems to be he's got that outside-the-box personality. He's a, you know, air quote here, he's a thinker.
I was just going to say that.
Teams don't really like that. And it's funny, I've seen several people, the world is getting crazy, man. I mean, you just can't say anything anymore. But
no, you can't. Take it from someone who works here every day at WEEI. Hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even remember what expert was saying it or what media. It was somebody with, you know, a big voice in the media. But essentially, they were just bringing up, you know, NFL teams may not like Rosen's persona. You know, they don't like these guys who are outside-the-box thinkers. The whole big thing was about he likes to ask why. He needs to know why. And people were jumping on the guy who said this. And it's like, dude, he's not giving you his opinion. He's trying to profile the decision maker's opinion. It's a big difference.
Yep.
These are two separate things. He's not saying he wouldn't take Rosen. He's saying these dinosaur mentality GMs are going to be afraid of him.
Right.
It's amazing, and this guy ends up having to defend himself. It's like, what world am I living in here? But anyway,
everyone's so quick to judge. Everyone's so quick to punch. They get their boxing gloves on all the time. Like, let me get my sentence out.
Rule number one on Twitter: if you're about to take someone to task, reread the tweet several times.
Yeah.
Make sure you haven't, you know.
Yeah, the context
wrong there. Right. Then do what you're going to do. But I think that take on Rosen could conceivably be accurate. You may have a team or two that says, nah, not our kind of guy. And that could cause him to slip.
Yeah.
Now his physical abilities are top 10 pick in the NFL. I don't think there's any question. I like Josh Rosen. I mean, he's a good prospect. Now, do I want the Jets trading up three and then taking Rosen? No, I don't.
Especially if he's a guy they could have gotten without getting rid of all those draft picks.
Well, that's the ironic element of it, is if you move up to get him and then he starts sliding.
Right,
Vintage Jets, I suppose.
Yeah.
But my thing is, if you're the Jets and you're going to roll four picks into one, now you have, in my opinion, you have to make sure there's a floor there. Like, you know, that's the thing the Jets have done, is they've gone all in.
Mm.
And when you go all in, you need to be right.
Well, we talked last week that, you know,
maybe
if they go,
say this, you can't be fully wrong.
Right. Well, they have to, like, if they're going to go all in and they get, like, Darnold or Baker Mayfield, that makes sense. But if you could have stayed or moved up and gotten Rosen or Allen, then you really, why'd you move? You know,
well,
what
they're
I mean?
In a tough spot in terms of staying because teams can trade ahead of you. And I get that. And you know, the Jets' history is they were sitting there waiting for Favre to fall in their lap, and then he went right, somebody traded up, jumped right in front of them, the Falcons, and they got him. And the rest is history. Obviously, the Jets passed on Marino, who went like one pick later and took Ken O'Brien.
Danny O'Brien.
Right, there's a lot of near misses at this position for the Jets historically, you know. And for me, Mayfield's a high floor player, but I don't know what the Jets think of Mayfield. So, to me, the Jets, as a Jet fan, I mean, I'm just sort of sitting there going, God, please don't screw this up. I just want one of the high floor players, because if the Jets whiff this pick, because of the way they trade, I mean, if they whiff at six, that's bad. If you give up 3 second rounders for the right to whiff, in addition to the sixth pick,
that's real bad.
Now you're setting yourself back a half a decade.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
You know, that's my issue with what they did. It's like, okay, you can do what you did, but you got to be right now.
Right. Yeah, they put a lot of pressure on themselves.
Yeah, you just removed the security netting from under the trapeze.
Right. Hey, maybe they'll look smart for the first time in a really long while.
It's
but
possible.
Yeah.
We'll see. I will let you know very early on Thursday.
We'll take Christian Hackenberg again.
Oh gosh, don't even get me started. So anyway, let's look at the top tier. My top tier is Darnold Mayfield.
Yep.
That's my top tier. Yep. And I've got very little separation between those two players. I really like them both. We could start with Darnold. I love his mental makeup. I love the way he has no memory whatsoever. One of the most incredible traits for a quarterback is to have no memory.
Like a closer.
Yeah, I mean, he comes out and throws a pick in the third quarter. His team is down. He's going to come right out and keep coming at you. Now, there is sort of a Jameis Winston element to the way he continues to push the ball into tight spots, and he does need to learn. But if you show me a college quarterback who didn't have any more learning to do, you know, I got a bridge I'll sell you. You know?
Well, let me tell you something, Marino.
All these guys come in needing to learn something.
Let me tell you something. Marino was a good college quarterback. He wasn't great. He was a great vision and insight into what the player could be and what he could blossom into by
and
the Dolphins.
A good example of a guy who had decent college coaching and then went into a great coaching situation at the pro level. So Shula knew what he had and unleashed the Kraken from day one.
Yep.
Dan Marino, one of my all-time hated players.
Oh, me too.
And then absolutely slaughtered my team.
And then the Patriots took Tony Eason, who was the thing that the Kraken would eat.
Tony Eason. Yeah, let's talk about Tony Eason. That's fun.
No, but you're right about Sam Darnold, though. I mean, he's one of those guys who looks like he kind of, I don't want to say fits the suit, because we kind of say that jokingly, but he does check all the boxes for sure, you know, doesn't he?
Checks all the boxes. He's got the required size. He's got the required arm strength.
Bit mobile. You know, he's got some mobility, right?
He's got enough mobility. I would say, you know, him and Mayfield are both plus mobility. They're not going to be running quarterbacks, but, you know, they're mobile enough to do some things, to protect themselves, to buy a little time. You know, the only thing about Darnold that gives me significant pause is the way he drops the ball. He's got a funky throwing motion. Mm. And I don't love it, and I'd love to change it, but the thing is, when you watch him play, it doesn't cost him much. Now, maybe on the pro level it might cost him a little more. We'll have to see. But apart from that, there's so much to like with this kid. He makes so many intuitive throws. He's got tons of heart, tons of guts. I absolutely anticipate rookie year struggles if he plays a lot, but I think he's the kind of kid who can learn and build from it versus being torn down by it. And that's an important distinction. I think some guys, depending on where you are on the developmental curve or where you are on that inner confidence curve, it can be damaging to play early. And that's really why Mayfield and Darnold are at the top of the class, because I don't think they're players you can destroy. I think they're too strong from the neck up. They will take their lumps early. They won't get their eyes knocked down. They'll learn what they're supposed to learn, and they'll keep going.
Even if Hugh Jackson's their coach? He seems like he could tear anybody down.
Even if Hugh Jackson is their head coach, that's actually a pretty good standard, Jim.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think these guys can survive Hugh Jackson.
That's a big
statement.
Sounds
like a reality TV show for football players.
Yeah, no, that's a big statement. I mean, you know, because he's going to be in a great position to ruin some good young quarterback potentially. And
we were talking about this yesterday. We're going totally off topic right now, but the only explanation I can come up with for why Hugh Jackson is still the Cleveland coach is that they have something set up for next year that couldn't be done this year. Like, they've got a nod and a wink deal with a big name coach.
That might be it.
I can't come up with another rational explanation for why they would keep that guy around.
Well, it's worth investigating, right, to see whose contract's coming up.
Belichick or who the heck it might be, but it's the only thing that I can come up with that makes any sense for what they did.
I know. What's he?
It's just my opinion.
What is he, like 1-30 in the last 2 years? I mean,
he's won one game in two seasons, and obviously he was not successful in his first stop as a head coach. I'm not saying that Hugh Jackson's not a good football man, but to me, he seems like a Peter Principle kind of guy. He should be an offensive coordinator or a quarterback coach.
Yep, and he killed Kaiser.
Yeah, he did. He did tremendous damage to Kaiser, and you don't jerk kids around like that. And he didn't do Kessler any favors either the year before.
Yeah,
he sees what he wants to see in a prospect. Then he talks the prospect up, puts the prospect in too soon, and when he doesn't get what he thinks he should get, he blames the prospect.
Right.
Not great leadership. I guess if you can get away with it, it's good business. But, you know, to me, you only get to do that a couple times before I start pointing the finger at you.
Yeah, well, he's seemingly making a living out of it, so it's kind of an oddity.
Right.
So, but Darnold and Mayfield, they're going to be able to have to weather that storm.
You may not remember this, but the Cleveland, I remember a press conference when they took Kessler, and the media was saying, you know, you really think Kessler's the guy? And he just gave them the trust me. He gave, trust me.
Oh, yeah, I'll trust someone with your record.
Right, so now he's throwing all of his things into Kessler. Okay, now you need to go make me look good, whether it's realistic or not.
Yeah.
And he was a kid who could have really benefited from time. He needed to build up his body a little bit. And it ended up the opposite thing started happening. He got beat up early. He had to keep playing, and eventually they had to get him out of there.
Yeah.
And they ended up giving him up to Jacksonville for nothing. You know, and they sold Kaiser for less than they should have as well. He definitely is a guy who, if in my opinion, because he's so impulsive, he ultimately ends up lacking wisdom.
Because that's a great point. That makes a ton of sense, and it actually answers some questions about how stupid his decision making has been.
You know, quarterbacks. I overuse this movie quote, but you cannot force open the petals of a flower. Flowers have to bloom.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way it goes. That's El Guapo from the Three Amigos.
The handsome
one. You cannot force open the petals of a flower. And Hugh Jackson seems determined to be the first guy to do it. You know?
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is, you get a good young quarterback with a lot of skills, you need to bring him along until the point where you can kick him out of the nest and he's actually going to fly. He's kicking little birds out of the nest and they're dying.
Well, look at what the Pats did with Brady when he replaced Bledsoe many years back. You know, a lot of the horizontal throws. It wasn't until the end of the year that you saw him kind of throwing it down the field, and look what he turned into. So, yeah, to make your point.
Yeah, Brady's a classic example where you had a kid who clearly had some ability. He clearly had a pretty decent arm, but he didn't have an NFL body. He didn't have an NFL body of work. So what do? They bring him in. They build up his body. They put him behind a pro you can learn from, and they teach him. And then after roughly a year and a full NFL offseason, they had the guts to say, hey, you know what? The kid's better than the old man. And they did it. And they were right. And I know it was a tough thing for Bledsoe at the time, but, hey, it's a tough business.
I think he'd tell you from any one of his vineyards that it was the right thing now.
Well played.
Yeah.
Well played.
Yeah.
So anyway, Darnold to me is a guy with, I think, underrated feet. Mm. He's got some footwork stuff that could be cleaned up, and you know, hopefully it will be, but there's so much to work with there. My biggest concern with him is, you know, didn't have that many starts. So I do think time will help him. I'd love to see him get September and maybe part of October just to make sure he's got the full playbook. That's the underestimated issue with these rookie quarterbacks is they have less time than they used to have. And, you know, the idea that you're going to come in and learn everything you need to know to start NFL games for an NFL team in August is just stupid.
And be NFL ready, too. I mean, because not only do they have to get all that stuff in a shorter window, but how much faster the game moves when they get out there. Like, it must
feel... Well, college QBing has been simplified while NFL QBing has been intensified.
It must feel like being in the middle of an avalanche. You know what I mean? When you've got, like, when that first break from a scrimmage comes and that rush comes, and they're bigger, they're faster, they're in your face, and you can't see anybody open, and it happens in a flash of a second.
Rookie quarterbacks, you see it all the time. They're playing too much with their conscious mind.
Right.
You need to get a lot of the skill set needs to be gotten to your left hand so you can think with your right hand.
Yeah.
I mean, muscle memory and all that kind of stuff is huge. And you're going to be learning enough things under fire in the NFL. You can't have your conscious mind working on the scheme. You need the scheme embedded.
Yep.
And it takes time.
Fling it.
It takes time. You know, Peyton Manning played pretty well his rookie year. He's sort of the standard of rookie year play in a lot of ways. But it's not like Manning was great his rookie year. He threw a lot of picks.
Yes, he did.
But he had enough time back then to get this. I mean, you're talking about someone who sucks up information probably as well as any quarterback in history. I mean, this kid was like a coach on the field at Tennessee.
And he worked at it. He liked it. He's a film rat kind of guy.
He was a grinder.
Yep.
He's a lot like Brady. There's no limit to how hard he's willing to work. So, and he was a guy who was a little behind the curve as a rookie. They're all going to be. No matter how good you think your rookie quarterback is, he's going to be fighting from behind. And, you know, people will talk about Roethlisberger. They'll even bring up Mark Sanchez. They'll bring up Russell Wilson as guys who've had some early success. But look at all three of those guys. They all were drafting behind a running offense.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they weren't out there as option one. They were out there as, we're going to have this guy throw as little as possible. And they managed to keep the train on the tracks.
Yep.
There's a big difference between doing that and doing what Aaron Rodgers does.
No doubt.
You know, and by the way, Rodgers, 2 full years to learn.
And a guy who didn't have that, who actually, you know, kind of got better when he got in a better situation, but of his own, was, you know, Drew Brees had to kind of come in and...
Yeah, Brees got thrown to the wolves.
Yeah.
Brees is the perfect guy to talk about when you're talking about Mayfield, because... You're looking at two guys very similar in size.
Yep.
You know, I actually was having this discussion on Twitter this morning. I was arguing in Mayfield's side. I think Mayfield's a little bit better in terms of movement and athleticism than Brees. He's not at the level of Wilson. Mm. But Wilson came in lighter than Brees and Mayfield, and he's a little bit shorter.
Mm.
So he's, you know, it's not shocking that Wilson's a little bit faster and quicker. Wilson also just has really good straight-line speed. He's about a... Off the top of my head, I think he ran a 4.52 or a 4.53 at the combine, which for a quarterback is great.
It's like wheels,
Yeah, but, you know, Mayfield is, gosh, what did he run? I think he ran about a 4.84.
4.84,
You know, he's got enough speed to be a mobile quarterback. He's not going to be one of these guys who's running all over the field. But he can extend plays. He can buy time. And so can Drew Brees. Drew Brees, if you go back to his early career, was a very mobile quarterback. But it was functional mobility within the typical QB paradigm. He wasn't a running quarterback.
Yeah, but he can escape and he can make things happen
Absolutely.
With his feet, sure, and his vision.
Even at his advanced age, he's still doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing with Baker Mayfield is, if he really does go at the top of the draft, it's going to be the first time anybody's ever taken a guy who's less than 6'1" that high in the draft. And there's reasons for that, you know. you know, it's we may have talked about this last week, so I don't want to repeat myself too much. But, you know, people say, oh, Breeze is short, Wilson's short. Being short doesn't matter anymore. Like, no, it does.
Those guys
you don't want to be short.
Those guys are outliers, too. I mean, they're great
Exactly.
players.
So when you're predicting that Mayfield's going to be a big-time quarterback, you are predicting success for an outlier. And, it's you should have some respect for that element, and I do. I just think that this kid's that good.
Well, let me ask you this, because he's a guy that I've been seeing a lot on ESPN.
And by the way, just for what it's worth, you know, Mayfield's got a cannon.
Yes, he does. Big you know, bad arm. Yep.
I think a lot of people don't realize just how strong an arm Mayfield has.
Yep.
And that helps.
One thing I've been noticing about him that I'm a little worried about, and this is totally intangible but and unquantifiable other than history, okay? I'm seeing a lot of him, you know, pre-draft on TV, which worries me because it makes me think of the U.S. Olympians, Dan and Dave. It makes me think of Eric Lindros. It makes me think of Brian Bosworth. It makes me think of every bust that got a bunch
of press.
Well,
Bosworth failed because he just wasn't as good as they thought he was. Lindros failed because of concussions. I mean, Lindros was a great player.
He was, but he was a slow roll. They were positioning him as like the next, you know, Gretzky Lemieux, and it never quite happened to that level. He was damn good. But you know,
I think Lindros was on his way to the Hall of Fame without the concussions.
Yeah, it took him a while, but he got there. But you know what?
Didn't Lindros come in at like 19?
Very young. Maybe not even that. But that's my point. Like they pedestal these guys before they get on the field, and more often than not, bad things happen. And I'm just seeing a lot of him getting a lot of media exposure.
His alpha attitude is a mild concern.
Yeah.
You know, the grabbing the crotch and planting the flag and, you know, all of this nonsense. You know, it's less than ideal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's a college kid. He's fired up. I mean, if he's doing that in 3 years, that's not great.
Mm.
My anticipation is that he's going to mature. I mean, you know, people make that jump and they start dropping Manziel comparisons. Now, look, if you can prove to me or even show me that it's likely that Baker Mayfield's got substance abuse problems, now we're talking about a whole new thing. Right. I haven't heard anything like that.
No, me either.
So, you know, Manziel was a junkie.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you're leaving, you know, trails of drugs in your wake. Yeah, that's a whole new problem. And, you know, again, if somebody can actually show me that Mayfield's got substance problems, now I'm going back to the drawing board here. But strictly from a standpoint of playing the game, I just love his game. He's got incredibly advanced footwork for a college quarterback, and that's with him running tons of RPO and stuff, which makes it, you know, that makes footwork sort of difficult.
Mm.
But he's really good at it, and I don't think he's going to, you know, have to do much of that in the pros anyway. I mean, he's going to have, like a lot of these kids, they're going to be spending more time under center. He's going to have to learn some drops and stuff like that. But it's when you see a kid who's as good technically as Baker Mayfield, that already tells you the kid can accept coaching at a high level.
Yeah, that's good.
Because you don't get footwork like his without working your ass off at it. You're not born with quarterback footwork. You're born with the talent for it, but not the actual footwork.
He strikes me as a guy that if he gets in the right situation, he could flourish, and if he gets in the wrong one, he could disappear. You know.
Well, that's where the Jets could be a problem for him, because the Jets have ruined a lot of careers. So now I suppose the upshot would be that the best quarterback in Jet history was a really cocky kid from a major college program. So maybe that's what the Jets need, is a guy like Mayfield who's going to come in and just not take crap from anybody.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll have to see.
Think of Rex Ryan as a coach, right? I mean, that's the best recent footprint they've had, and he came in with a lot of swagger and more swagger than talent and made some things happen.
And then if you look at the other major success the Jets have had, it was with Parcells, Belichick, two guys with a lot of football swagger.
Yep.
So, I mean, as a Jet fan, having an outsized personality, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because most of our positive history, you know, what little there is of it, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's the type of guy who's been successful for the Jets in the past. So, I'd be very happy if they took Mayfield. But I'm not blind to reality. Mayfield's going to have a recalibration phase when he comes into the NFL.
Yeah.
He's probably going to struggle let's put like, I'm going to put like 8 games on it. He's going to have an 8-game window where he's going to have to re-find himself.
Yeah, and that's probably light. I mean, look at some of the, even some of the greatest quarterbacks. You know, like Elway struggled for, like, Jesus, I'm going to say almost 2 years. Bradshaw struggled terribly, and he didn't have the talent of like an Elway.
Elway struggling looked pretty damn awesome. Let's throw that out there.
But he was under duress, man. I mean, he had a rough time.
Yeah, but that's not his fault. I mean, look, I'm not talking about the Jets struggling. The Jets could suck for infinity.
Yep.
I'm not about to start saying that Mike Maccagnan is suddenly going to, you know, find the stroke or whatever the hell you want to say. But I'm just talking about just Mayfield's game.
Yeah.
He's going to need some time to learn what he can and can't do on this level, because unlike guys like Darnold, let's stick with Darnold,
yeah,
you know, he does not have that prototypical size where he can just stand in the pocket and see the field. The good news for Mayfield is he's a little bit taller than Breeze, which is going to help. And he played at Oklahoma. Now, Breeze played at Purdue, which,
yeah,
you know, it's a decent college, but the Oklahoma line definitely is bigger than the Purdue line.
Yep.
So that you know, puts a little bit of a, that helps Mayfield a little bit. It's hard for me to say negative stuff about this player. His film just really blows me away. He's got wonderful timing and accuracy and anticipation. He really knows what's going on. He knows every single player on the football field, what they're doing and why. He's exactly the kind of quarterback that succeeds.
That's critical for a quarterback position. Those things, those elements you just hit are the key ones.
Yeah, well, I call it the switch. What are they like at the switch?
Yeah.
That's between the ears, and he's a guy who can be your engineer for your team, just like Tom Brady and a lot of the great ones.
Yep. Pretty good.
Now, we've covered Darnold and Mayfield. Let's move down into Tier 2, because Tier 2 is where it sort of gets interesting.
Yeah, this is a fascinating tier. So in it you have Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen, who we talked about, and Josh Allen.
Right. And moving back to the Patriots, I think this is where, if they want to get aggressive, these guys are in play for them.
Yeah.
And one of these guys could be in play for them.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, if you go back around the combine time, and I know that, you know, Lamar Jackson didn't go, it's been back to that time period.
But he didn't run. He didn't run.
Yeah. It's at that time period where his stock was probably the lowest, and now he's at the top of that second tier for you. So that's exciting to kind of see.
Well, listen, he's at the top of the second tier for a few reasons. First of all, I'm a fantasy guy.
Yes, okay? He's got the big fantasy upside.
In fantasy terms, you know, if Lamar Jackson gets the right landing spot, he goes right to the top of my board, number one. Easy.
Yep.
For fantasy.
Yep.
I mean, you're offering me a guy like that for fantasy. There's no way I'm going to hesitate. But my pre-draft rankings are a little bit more slanted towards just NFL only. So for the NFL, he's third behind two very, very highly ranked prospects for me relative to my rankings. The reason I have him lower is because I just feel like, even though he has talent that's commensurate with the two guys above him, I think Lamar Jackson needs time.
He needs some nurturing, no question
right.
about it.
If this guy's playing day one, I think it hurts his career.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Can he go out there and win football games right away? Maybe, because he's an exceptional athlete,
yeah,
and I think a lot of people really underrate him as a quarterback in terms of what's going on from the neck up. I think he's pretty good from the neck up, but what I want to see from him is I want him to learn to protect his body better. I think he desperately needs to learn to get down and to get out of bounds.
Mm.
It's really important for a guy playing with his body type. He cannot be just throwing his body around. He'll end up like Vic, where he's on the injury list every week with sore shoulder, partially separated shoulder,
yeah,
concussion. You know, you don't want him following that career path. So for me, this is a guy where I'm investing in him early, so I'm not dealing with all kinds of issues late.
Yep.
So to me, 1 year at least, more than a year would be ideal. I've already said this, and you and I have talked about it.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson to New England
phenomenal.
I think it would be amazing.
Well, the minute they traded for that 23rd pick, I said to myself, tantalizing, because I know.
Well, that puts him in the game.
Yeah.
That puts him in the game.
Yeah.
Because if he slides into the teens, that you actually have the juice to go get him if you're so inclined. But you've done a good job at convincing me that the Patriots really could use all of these picks, because they've got some holes to fill. So
they need to. They got to get a left tackle. They've got to fortify that defense at very important positions. You know, like linebacker specifically. They need a corner. They've got some holes. You know, and it doesn't end there. So I think he's a. If they're really confident in their board, which they often are, and they think they can fill those holes throughout the draft, or at least like three major ones between the first four picks they have and the first 63 picks of the draft.
Give me the two biggest holes that you think.
Left tackle and linebacker.
Okay.
No question.
Bad draft to get a left tackle.
There's like two, and that's why I think they have to jump.
You don't need a first-round pick on a linebacker.
No, you don't. So that's what makes them interesting.
Yeah. Look, you and I both, we don't know how much they may or may not like Jackson, but if they do love him, they may be in a position to go get him. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I'm saying is it would be a lot of fun if Tom Brady retires and the Patriots go from Brady to Jackson. I mean, it's funny. That would be like a cup of coffee for the fan base, you know? Meaning it's like an energized, like, it'd be like a Red Bull, you know? It's like, oh, wow, we're really going to miss Brady, but this is fun.
Yeah. Well, that was my point all along. With like, I made the Jacoby Brissett reference when he had that 35-yard scamper for a touchdown on Thursday Night Football when he started for the Pats.
There's no comparison Brissett.
No, I know. But the look of just pure delight on Belichick's face, it made me wonder. I'm like, I wonder if like, at some point – at 65 years old, he's going to switch gears a little bit in terms of how he operates the offense.
You're definitely throwing a lot into one expression. I mean, he may have just had some good gas.
But he's so expressionless. You know what I mean? I am throwing a lot in.
Mouth moved. What's going on?
Yeah, hey. I'm not laying the gauntlet down, but I'm kind of tempted to. You know what I mean? I'm a little tempted to.
Lamar Jackson, for me, what I want to see for him is I want to see him. Bill Parcells was always big about talking about the dark and when the lights come on, right?
Yep.
Time in the dark is invaluable because it's really hard to learn with the lights on.
Yeah.
Once you're in the stadium and it's full of fans, the idea that you're going to be learning anything in that environment, that's a tough sell.
Sensory overload.
You'll gain experience. It's good experience. Like, and going back to Mayfield, that's what Mayfield needs. Mayfield needs to be in the game to learn because he's learned all the technique stuff.
Mm.
What he needs to do is understand the difference between NFL throwing windows and college throwing windows and NFL lines of sight versus college lines of sight, and it's going to take him time to learn it, and you can only learn it on the field. But for Jackson, he needs to fix his base. I don't like his base.
Yeah.
He throws from a narrow base way too much. Mm. It's going to be to his benefit to get those feet cleaned up a little bit.
Mm.
And then the other thing is he needs to find, this is sort of like a Bagger Vance kind of thing. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Oh, come on, of course. Yeah.
You know, he teaches Damon to find his
Junis.
True swing.
Was his name Junis, the golfer?
Junis.
That's it.
Right. So Junis needs to find his true swing.
Yeah.
Well, Jackson is in that same kind of boat. He's got several different release points. I don't really care which one he settles on, but he's got to settle on one.
Yeah.
He needs one important thing about an NFL quarterback is that when all things are equal and you're throwing, it needs to be the same. Now, obviously, if you're running around, sometimes you got to throw off your back foot. Sometimes you need to find a weird arm angle, throw sideways, throw backwards, whatever.
And some people flourish at that, like a Flutie, for instance.
But when he's clean, you want a definable, repeatable throwing motion with a consistent release point.
Yep.
And that's not something you learn under duress.
No.
So he's a player where I just feel like time invested will really pay dividends. So I hope he gets that time.
Yeah. Josh McDaniels Rosen, might have to be Bagger Vance if he comes here, but someone's going to have to be.
Patriots, it's been proven over time the Patriots are a good coaching staff.
Yep.
They obviously did some good work with Brissett. They obviously brought Garoppolo all the way to where he needed to be.
Yep.
I have all the belief in the world in the Patriots from a coaching standpoint. So, you know, I don't know that you could do much better than going to the college of Belichick.
Yeah, no argument here.
Yeah, we've been through this so many times on the show. So that's where I am with Jackson. Love him as a prospect. Physically, he's just off the charts.
Yep.
Really fun to watch. Kid plays a lot of heart. And again, pretty smart quarterback from what I've seen. He definitely makes multiple reads. It's not that he couldn't handle it mentally. It's that physically, I'd love to see him get to where he needs to be before we throw him to the Wolves.
Yeah,
that's the key thing.
I think that's fair.
Now, moving down to Rosen, lot to like. Mm. There's a lot to like because he just throws the snot out of the football. My thing with him is I just, and I think we talked about this last week, but when things go off script, I feel like his level of play drops precipitously. Mm. And he's another quarterback where I really feel like time would benefit him greatly. I'd love to see Josh Rosen get a season and not get thrown to the Wolves. In terms of throwing the ball, he's there. He is there.
He's got a big arm.
He's got a. He throws a big ball. He throws a beautiful ball. He's able to vary speeds. He's got touch. He can zip it in there. So I heard somebody on Twitter today compare him to Matt Ryan, which actually wasn't terrible. Mm. But you've got to think of Matt Ryan with a big arm. Matt Ryan's got an arm.
Yeah, he can get it down there, but I hear you. Yeah, there's bigger arms for sure.
I've never been a big Matty Ice fan, but that's okay. But I think it's not a bad comparison because Ryan's the same kind of thing. If you can get him moving side to side, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
So Rosen's a guy who, A, needs to learn to climb the pocket versus grab bag, and then B, I think he needs to build his body up. I think a year in an NFL strength and conditioning program would be really good for him. So, you know, we'll see. But that's where I'm at with Rosen. My comparison to Rosen is probably, in terms of just level of prospect, he's in that Derek Carr area for
me. Okay, yeah.
First
Derek Carr worked out well, yeah.
I definitely have a positive view on him. I would love to see him not get rushed.
Okay.
You
yeah.
Know?
Fair enough. And Derek Carr really, he really, you know, had a nice
Carr's
soft
a little
landing.
Bit better. It's not a perfect comparison.
Yeah.
It's more on like where do I rank him on a 1 to 10 scale? I've got him right about in that 7-5 area with Derek Carr. Now Carr's probably got 95% of the arm talent that Rosen has.
Yeah.
But Rosen doesn't have the agility strengths that Carr has.
What Carr also has is grit. How's Rosen with grit?
Yeah, Carr's got heart. I like Derek Carr. I mean, he had a rough year last year, but you know, generally, I'm a fan of Derek Carr.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, your question. I heard it.
He's got grit. You can see it on the field.
Yeah.
You know, but I wonder about Rosen.
And he wants it. Derek Carr wants it.
He does want it.
You can tell. Yeah.
How's Rosen in that category? How's his want to and his grit?
You know, I've had the benefit of watching Carr play NFL games for a few seasons now, so it's easy for me to say that. Rosen, I'm not going to take. I don't want to say he doesn't have it.
You can't read someone's heart. I don't have a read on it. That's why I asked. Yeah. You know?
I'd say he's fine that way. I don't think he's deficient in that way. My problems with him are I'm a little bit worried about him holding up, so I'd like to see him build his body up.
Yeah.
And I want to see him in an offense where he knows everything. He cannot be thinking on the field. Because he's going to need every ounce of energy physically because he doesn't have great movement capabilities.
Mm.
I don't want him swimming when he's on the field.
Mm.
I want him to have all the advantages he needs when he's on the field. And if he goes to a crappy team, this is a kid who needs protection. You know, Rosen is the first guy on the list so far where I'm very concerned if he doesn't have protection.
Yeah, and I wonder, this is the mystery we don't know. And I think
Not to say that Darnold and Mayfield don't, and Jackson, those guys all should have good protection.
Sure.
All quarterbacks should have it. But to me, Rosen's a kid who sort of needs it.
Yeah, I think physically and then mentally is a question mark, right? What will the beating do to him? Does it ruin him? You know what I mean? Can he get up from it?
Beatings have multiple effects on young quarterbacks. There's two things, to me, two main things that you worry about happening. First of all, it just destroys their general confidence.
Yes.
You know what? Let's do three things. Destroys their general confidence, can get them hurt.
Yes.
Which is just bad.
Yeah.
And then the other problem is it knocks their eyes down. And once you knock a quarterback's eyes down, it takes a lot of coaching to bring them back up.
Mm.
We've talked about this before in the show. You don't want your rookie learning the wrong things. You don't want your rookie learning survival tactics.
Yeah.
You want him learning how to beat the other team, not how to live through the game.
Yep.
These are two separate things, and we've seen quarterbacks ruined because they're just out there trying to survive.
Yeah.
That's counterproductive. If you're the Jets and you draft Josh Rosen, and that's what you're throwing him into,
Bad news. Should
be throwing McCown into that, not Rosen.
Yep. Yes. So
that's the way it should roll. Okay.
Yep.
So, you know, that's where I'm at with him. Now, Rosen and Jackson, if somebody wanted to take Rosen over Jackson, I don't have a problem with that. I personally, I got a little bit of a crush on Jackson.
Yeah, look, and his fantasy guys, there's just so much upside there if he gets... We've seen it. We've seen it with a lousy quarterback like Tebow, who can do things with his feet, you know?
Tebow's a big freaking rabbit hole. Let's not go down that.
No, I know. You hear what I'm saying, though. I'm just saying from a fantasy
perspective. Let's go to Josh Allen, who's the last guy in my second tier.
Well, this guy is very interesting to me because this is the Johnny Bravo guy. You know, he fits the physical.
And he's in this tier, so I don't hate him.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to kill Josh Rosen here. Josh Allen. I get my Joshes confused. Let's just apologize.
No problem. But this is the guy at 237 pounds, and he's big, and he's strong, and he's interesting. He's a very interesting player.
He's the kind of, like, I would have a lot of fun with him if he hadn't become such a hot button issue.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like if you want to go to the football and analyst bar, like, that's what you have to, that's the question you have to answer to the bouncer when you go in. What do you think of Josh Allen? he is the hot button player out there at the position right now, which is amazing when you consider he's in a draft with Darnold, Mayfield, and
Lamar
Jackson.
Good class, but he's an interesting
volatile group in terms of opinions are all over the place on these quarterbacks. Mm. But anyway, so Josh Allen, I think that everybody is so intensely into placing their bets on this player that I think we're forgetting the big picture. And the question is, what is he worth, right? Mm. We're going to the NFL draft. What is this guy worth?
Yeah, when you're willing to take him.
Right. So the question is, what are the odds he hits? What are the odds he bombs? And what does that break out to in terms of what pick is he worth? You know, for me, he's a middle-of-the-first-round kind of guy. Mm. Like, I would take him around where the Bills took E.J. Manuel, okay, which was a terrible pick.
Terrible pick.
Because Manuel did not have the upside skill set that Allen has, and he had all the problems.
He should have been like a third-round pick.
Yeah, I would have been fine with E.J. Manuel in the second round. And the Bills did with E.J. Manuel what the Jets did with Josh Hill? What was it? Stephen Hill.
Oh, the receiver?
They took Stephen Hill, big, tall, fast receiver with a lot of potential, but he was raw beyond words. Mm. So the Jets take him in the second round, which is defendable, but then they start him week one, which was completely idiotic.
Yep.
Job number one is when you take a project, you need to know he's a project.
So, set him up for success. You know, they put him
up there to fail. Bills did the same thing with Manuel. They overpaid, and then somebody said, "Hey, well, if you're going to overpay, you got to play him." So now it's a double negative whammy because you paid too much for the guy, and now you're going to go ruin him.
Yep.
I mean, they ruined that kid. I mean, he may have had the ability to play in the league if you had given him a year and a half.
Yeah, he had talent.
He had some talent.
Big play talent.
Strong kid. Yeah. Big arm. Had a big heart. He's a good kid. But you can't just throw the whole, kit and caboodle at these rookies when they're not ready. You get E.J. Manuel's career when you do that. So Rosen's a guy where if you just throw him out there with
Allen,
a year.
Allen, sorry.
I think you're asking for trouble. But, having said that, if Cleveland is actually telling the truth and they're going to draft Allen at number one and let him learn for a full year behind Tyrod Taylor, well, who knows? Mm. I mean, that could work because people are all hyped up about his completion percentage. But what's more important than the percentage itself is the underpinnings. Why is his completion percentage low? To me, there's like at least three factors with his completion percentage. One is that he's not particularly accurate. Mm. That is a factor.
There's no question that's a factor. That's the biggest knock on him.
What I'm saying is that the 56% is indicative, yes, of a guy who's not tremendously accurate, but it's also indicative of an offense that doesn't really give its quarterback much of a rhythm.
Yeah.
They didn't scheme their receivers open very well at all, and then you compound it that the guys can't separate. So if you're not scheming them open, they're not really getting open.
Mm.
Okay? So he was throwing into... I heard one guy this morning say, well, Allen's going to have to throw into tighter windows in the NFL level. Everybody knows the windows get smaller. It's like, dude, have you watched Wyoming?
Yeah.
Because you're throwing in, they didn't even have windows. They had those little portals you see on a ship.
Right.
It was like every single throw had to go through a hanging tire.
Yeah.
It was not an easy offense for a quarterback to play in. So I think you need to be fair about that. So, give the player a little bit of you know, a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. And then you have physical flaws that can be corrected, and he has some things that can be corrected. First of all, he needs to, just like Jackson, he needs to find his release point and stick with it. Mm. That's one. And his feet need to be cleaned up. His feet are inconsistent. They're a little all over the place. I mean, is it as bad as Blake Bortles was? No. Better than Bortles.
He was like Jerry Fleck from Best in Show with his feet, Blake Bortles. Two F feet. Have a room reservation for Fleck?
Dude, please don't go down the Eugene Levy Festival.
So we'll we just say it. Utility Closet?
No, I'm just kidding. That is such an underrated movie.
Great movie.
Lynch was so good in that damn movie.
All of them.
But anyway, Alan is a kid where if you give him the time to clean this stuff up, he could end up being really good.
Mm.
So I think it's wrong to dismiss the fact that this could end up being a fairly special player. The question is, where does he become a good risk-reward opportunity? I don't think number one is necessarily the spot for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, particularly if you think you can get him a little later. I mean,
well, that's the trick for Cleveland, right?
Yeah, they got
the one, they've got the four.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's killing the Giants. And they're killing them for taking Saquon Barkley. And you just sort of want to, like, slap people around and go, dude, they haven't taken him yet.
And they haven't had a running back in a really long time, right. Too,
well,
so you can understand
I think it's malpractice if they take him at two, personally.
Right.
But, I mean, I really do. But, you know, I mean, let's look at this rationally. The Giants are sitting in the two hole, right? Let's say they want a quarterback. Well, Cleveland's sitting in the one and the four, and it looks like they'd love to do Barkley and a quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, if you're the Giants, are you going to sit there and say you're taking a quarterback?
No.
No! You could do that in a million years. You're going to sit there and broadcast to everybody on the planet that you don't want a quarterback.
Right.
So that you're going to take Barkley because you want to encourage teams to either A, trade up to the one to get Barkley.
Yep, exactly.
Or for Cleveland to say, hey, let's take the non-QB first and the QB second.
Because we know we're going to get them. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the Giants are just playing, well, actually, you know what? Let's not say that. There's a good chance the Giants are just playing games here.
Yep.
So, you know, if they actually sit there too and take Barkley, I will sharpen up my fork and I will go after him just like everybody else. But I think give them time to do the right thing
yeah.
first. And as far as them taking a non-QB, it's malpractice to stick it to and do it. I think we talked about this last week. But at bare minimum, you got to like slide back with the Jets at least.
They gotta.
You know.
I mean, you know.
And you don't need a lot to do it because if you're the Giants, you're actually taking Barkley. Well, why not take the Jets' third rounder, flip picks?
Yep.
Because you know they're not taking Barkley.
Right.
And if you're the Jets, you'll pay something to make sure no one gets up in front of you. Like, if I'm the Jets and you call me and say, hey, give us something to jump up in front of, you know, and we'll switch spots with you. And then the Jets come back with, well, you're not taking our guy. Why are we going to switch with you? Go, oh, okay, no problem. We'll talk to you later. We're calling Buffalo right now, by the way.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, you want to move that third rounder now? Okay,
yeah.
Good, beautiful. Let's do business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you're the Giants, you at least do some type of swap with the Jets.
You
at
would
the
think.
Bare minimum, you do that.
And how old's Eli now? He's 38.
I think Eli is 37.
He's an old 37, man. He's yeah.
Well, I'm not as much as I'm not
physically.
On the Eli is done bandwagon personally.
Mm.
I think if here's what I would say. Introduce me to the quarterback in the NFL last season who could have lost his number one, number two, and number three receivers.
With a shitty line,
and functioned well.
Yeah, with a shitty line, too.
And yeah,
a horrible
with a shitty
coach.
Line, no running game.
Horrible
a
coach.
A porn star as a coach.
Yeah. That's
well,
an insult
star
to porn
haircut.
Stars.
Not a porn star.
Porn star looking coach.
Right. the buck naked haircut.
Yeah. Some very lovely
yeah,
porn stars. Out there.
So much stuff going on bad for the Giants last year. I think Manning, if you put him in the right offense, can still do it for a little bit longer.
That's it. You got to.
But having said that,
similar,
if you're the Giants,
similar situation maybe, of the Pats, they got to fortify that position. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, how many chances are you going to get to draft a franchise QB?
Not a lot.
Right. So
particularly with them,
Giants,
where they can, you know, they're pretty. They've got a team that could bounce back and play well. They're not going to be in that position to get the franchise
right, because now you're talking about, well, that's where it gets interesting for the Giants. Like, if their attitude really is, we want to win right now, okay, that I could see that because you're getting Odell Beckham back, and you can get an impact player at the two. But you still need to maximize that asset.
No question.
You still need to get as much as you can out of that two pick.
And they're miles behind the Eagles too, by the way. I mean, they're not. They're in striking distance, but they're several miles behind.
There's a gap for sure. But here's the one thing I'll say about the Giants, and I don't think it's the right thing to do. But if they actually take Barkley, whether they move him back with the Jets or not, if they actually go out there week one next year and they're putting Barkley, Odell Beckham, and Evan Ingram on the field together.
That's a lot of talent on the field, no doubt.
Well, it's a lot of talent, but it's a unique combination. I've never seen a team with anything even approaching that type of matchup. Just nightmare.
Mm.
Because Ingram is impossible to match up with. Odell Beckham is a field tilter.
Yep.
And now you've got Barkley, who can literally play receiver and running back almost equally.
Mm.
If you put those three guys in the huddle and you're sitting there trying to, as a defense, going, well, what's our personnel going to be? Hey, good luck.
Mm.
I mean, Belichick would be like, wow, would that be a lot of fun?
It is a play-to-win strategy. There's no question of offensively. There's no question
about
it.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. All I'm saying is, as someone who's stuck in the New York television market, I'm excited to watch.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That would be fun to watch.
Mm.
So, you know, in that I could care less if the Giants do something stupid, bring on Barkley. That's my attitude.
Yeah.
I get to watch Saquon Barkley every Sunday.
Yeah. In the presence of the other guys, sure.
Yeah, and I mean, for Eli, and here's where it gets interesting with Manning, who clearly is not what he was, but you're playing right into Eli's strengths, which is read it, see it, get rid of it. And that mitigates the offensive line issues. So it's interesting.
Similar to where the Patriots would be
fun to watch.
Yeah. Hmm. Similar to where the Patriots are offensively, where they're going to have to get rid of it quickly, as their, you know, the line shakeup is the problem.
Right.
Yep.
The difference is the Patriots have been morphing in and out of that type of scheme for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, for the Patriots, that's just like breathing.
It's turning a switch. Yeah, the studs are already there in a big
Brady's,
way.
Yeah, I mean, all the pieces around Brady are like the cards dealt on a particular hand, and Brady knows exactly how to play every hand.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt.
So he's like, oh, we got problems at the tackles. All right, let's get the football out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They'll be doing more short area routes. They'll be spreading you out more. They'll be looking more like the Patriots of the past.
Yep.
That's okay.
Yep. Yeah, no problem.
You know?
No problem there. No, they're suited for it. If there's no more on Allen, this is the guy I really want to get to, is the next guy, and he's in his own tier. I love people like that. You got any more on Allen that you want to kind of dive into, or can we move to my
You know
guy?
What, dude? We can do a whole show on every single one of these quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll revisit Allen in our post-draft landing spot thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I guess the one interesting thing about Allen is, where the hell is he going to go? I guess
throw a dart. Throw a dart in the first half of the draft. It could be anywhere, any one of those teams that's in the mix.
I mean, unless everybody's getting it wrong, he's going one. So we'll see. Mm. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, let's get to your guy here. I know who it is.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph. You know, it's, I like this guy, and he seems to be climbing a little bit. And he's.
I definitely like him.
Mm.
I don't love him, but I like him.
Yeah, he's climbing. I'm wondering if he's climbing a little bit too far for the Patriots to get there.
If he is, I wouldn't worry about it.
But I see something here. You know,
I think he's another one who needs time.
Yep.
He's got back foot issues. I don't like his positioning. I think a lot of his throws, the hips aren't coming through, the shoulders are getting caught halfway through rotation, and you see a lot of balls coming out a little funky.
Mm.
He's also got small hands, which is going to affect, you know, if he's moving to his right, sometimes the throws he's going to lose balls to the right. But
weather, too. Small hands
overall,
are tough from weather.
I mean, I'm impressed with him.
Yeah.
I first of all, he's a big quarterback, and he's got all the benefits of being a big quarterback. He can stand in the pocket. He can see the field. He can definitely read defenses.
Mm.
I'm a fan of Mason Rudolph, but he's another one where I'd love to see him get at least a year. And so he definitely fits the Patriots. You know, for him to come in and learn behind Brady is absolutely, I think, his best case scenario.
Well, he's got those things that attract a Patriots fan, you know, in the Brady era, which is, and you just said it, you know, his field vision is good, and that's so important in the offense that the Patriots historically run, you know, in the 18 yeah. years of the Brady era. So that's yeah, what kind of pops for me with him.
He throws a nice deep ball.
Yeah.
When everything's working right with him, his deep ball is pretty. You know, if the Patriots land Mason Rudolph without trading up and can get two more years out of Brady, that's pretty good.
That's nice.
That's a pretty good scenario.
Yep.
So let's move down to the next group, because I think now we're getting into the Patriot group, right?
Yeah, this is the tier that's interesting.
Rudolph definitely has a good chance of going to New England, but I think this next group also,
yeah,
good chance.
And these guys are later in the draft, and this is interesting. So the guys we've been hearing about...
We don't know how much later, though.
We you know, don't. Well, that's the thing. Like, you know,
moving into the late first round to early third round group, I think.
You know, I'm glad you said that early third round, because that's where I think a couple years ago, if the Pats are going to jump, and that was a good quarterback class too, with Carr and Garoppolo and the whole gang. But, you know, the Patriots had Garoppolo on their draft board higher than most. They took him in the middle of the second round. So a lot of these people are looking at, like, Kyle LaLeta and Luke Falk, and you're thinking third round. But if the team likes them, and I've noticed that you've moved Mike White up a little bit from Western Kentucky, if they like them, then they're going to be a little higher on the board. So, again, it could be early third, or it could be one of the usage spots for those two second-round picks that they have, too.
Yeah, White's an interesting player. I think mental makeup-wise, he's a guy who can play pretty soon.
Mm.
But he's not a guy you want to put behind a bad offensive line. So, you know, definitely he's behind Hoyer this year, in my mind.
Mm.
You know, Mike White is not mobile. And when I say not mobile, we're talking about 5.09 in the 40. We're talking about a 27-inch vertical. You know, this is a stationary quarterback. So, you know, he's a guy where the Patriots really, I would, hopefully Skarnecchia can stay around for three or four more years.
Yeah, and get the most out
really
of that line.
I think he needs an offensive line even more than Brady does. So, you know, let's take that with a grain of salt. Having said that, he's got a ton of heart, and boy, does he make throws. Mike White makes throws, man. I mean, just tons of them.
Yep.
So he's the kind of guy, if you can keep him clean, give him a good look at what's out there, he's going to make good throws.
He's like your vintage pocket passer type guy, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
So, you know. If that's what the Patriots want, I think he'll be there with their second round pick, and it's a possibility. LaLeta, I have really right there with White. A little bit different.
Yeah.
He's more mobile. Definitely a little bit of a better athlete. About 2 inches shorter than White.
Mm.
But in terms of bulk, he's only a couple pounds behind him. So LaLeta definitely just a teensy bit on the short side, but, you know, fits the suit. For the most part.
Does the program worry you at all, coming out of Richmond? Does that worry you at all?
It's not a plus, but the problem isn't so much Richmond. It's that, you know, his film, I like LaLeta's film. I see a lot of things that are good, and I definitely think he's a developmental prospect who could make it. I guess my big thing with him is Garoppolo is sort of the standard, and I just don't see Jimmy Garoppolo when I look at Kyle LaLeta.
Mm.
I want to, but I just don't. Because Jimmy Garoppolo had a couple things that were just really off the charts. I don't know if you remember the conversations you and I had.
I do. The quick release, the great field vision, and throw a great long ball. Yeah,
they're just you can't really overvalue those traits at the NFL level.
No,
and we saw it second half of last year. Like, I think some people expected him to be good, but I don't think many people expected him to be that good.
I remember that Miami game, that first half. I'm like, wow, it's all coming together. It's all coming true. He looks so good.
And I think that's the thing that, you know, Belichick maybe doesn't have as much heart as some people, but I think Garoppolo is one of those people who got in there a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there's a little bit of a father-son thing going on there.
Yeah, and it's just a little bit of that, I got this one, I nailed this one, you know? And I think, you know, they watched him in practice. They knew what they had. The thing is, you can't convince anybody who wasn't in the room of it, right?
Mm.
So unless, like the way the Patriots could have maxed out value on Garoppolo would have been if last offseason McDaniels had gone somewhere and needed a quarterback.
Right.
Then you'd have gotten a first-rounder and a second-rounder.
Right, because he would have seen them and knew what they had, right.
Because he'd have been like, no, I don't need to see this kid. Go get him.
Yep.
I've been in the room with this kid. This is our guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as much as San Francisco may have liked him, they didn't have that kind of inside information. Mm. But Belichick and everybody in Patriot land did.
Yep.
And I do believe Mr. Brady did.
No question. He knew. He knows. Yeah, he knew.
Yeah.
No question.
Right.
You know, it was such a level jump. Pete, there was such a level jump in the preseason games. Like, I remember people really wanted to take a look at even Hoyer when they took him out of Michigan State and that zipper had
Hoyer's a good quarterback.
Ryan Mallett, you know, all those, you know, and they just looked terrible. And Castle, he looked terrible. There was such a level jump when Garoppolo got in the preseason. It was like, that's what a quarterback looks like. And you're right. I think
Brady
did
see
it.
It's accurate.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and look, you know, Castle's an NFL backup, you
yep.
know. Now, granted, with Belichick, he wins 11 games, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mallett was a guy with a lot of arm talent, but
Stonehead.
He didn't process well, and he had heavy feet. What are you going to do?
Stonehead. But it's interesting. So of these guys, Mike White, prototypical pocket passer. Kyle Auletta shows a lot of the traits,
right.
Smaller program, smaller competition.
Luke Falk.
Yeah, well, that's the guy I was going to get to. To me, this is a guy who's got a little bit of both of what those guys have. A little interesting player here.
Yeah, again, not a great athlete, but maybe a little bit of a sneaky athlete. He gives you some length. He can definitely be a pocket passer. He's got that Tom Brady thing, actually, Luke Falk. He reminds me of Tom Brady, but Tom Brady light.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's a Tom Brady-style quarterback, but he's, you know. He's like a Camaro to Brady's Lamborghini.
Well, he's kind of got that. He's got that that rhythm kind of accuracy that
right.
Garoppolo has, right? A little bit of that. A little bit of that that Brady can get. When Brady's like just, which he does most of the time.
The problem with Falk is that he's going to be fine as long as your offense is running downhill. I'm just not sure what he's going to be like. I don't think he's got the ability to sit there and take hits like Brady used to have.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can say what you want about Tom Brady, but there were some times where he took a licking and kept on ticking.
No question.
In his career. Probably, in my opinion, he doesn't get enough credit for that.
He's a really tough quarterback. And,
yeah,
and before all this, like, Gumby bouncing back up off the – before all that, he took his licks and he absolutely stayed
in. Yeah, and I think if you go back –
Don't forget the AFC Championship game with his foot. You know what I mean? I mean, he
– Well, let's go back and look at some of the really great quarterbacks we've seen. Look at Philip Rivers. What did he do against the Patriots in that playoff game? He played on one leg.
Yep.
You know, Joe Montana had his back broken in half, came back and won a Super Bowl. You know, Peyton Manning had his neck fused together, came back and won a Super Bowl. Brett Favre was almost killed in a championship game one year, and he was still, and he did not leave the game. This is a trait among the great players. Troy Aikman, tough as freaking nails.
He got rolled his rookie year. He got killed. Yeah.
So when you go, John Elway, just tough beyond words.
Yep.
So when you go back through the great ones, this is a recurring thing.
That theme's always there.
Right, this is something you want out of your quarterback, and Brady most definitely had it. And we've been over this many times, but this is where Garoppolo is unproven as of yet.
It's the durability, yeah.
Right. And it's the durability, yes, and the ability to be what you are now once you've been beat up.
Yes, yeah.
To not have your level of play drop dramatically. You know, I mean, Rodgers last year. Rodgers, no way should have played in that one game.
Yeah, he still got out there and played.
But they couldn't keep him off the field. It's just it's part of the internal thing that these great quarterbacks have.
So let's relate it back to Luke Falk a little bit. So he's got kind of he's a little bit on the leaner side, right? He's
a little bit
kind
on
of
the
a skinny,
lean
blanky
side.
Kind of guy.
Yeah, and I just wonder if I don't know about him running around the pocket making throws.
Mm.
He makes throws from the pocket well. He can step up and make throws. You get him moving laterally, I think you got problems.
Mm. That's a throwing the football program, Washington State too.
No. He can be a volume thrower, but it needs to be done on his terms.
Yeah,
would sort of be my way of explaining it. So I just think he's a kid who needs protection. And here's the other thing. Can he do what Brady did, right? Can Luke Falk come in and 2 years from now be 10 pounds bigger and stronger?
I think so.
Right?
But that,
I mean,
we
all know what Brady looked like at Michigan, right? We've all seen the pictures with the white T-shirt, right?
Oh, he was like skinny fat.
Right. So, I mean, clearly that is not the guy who took the job from Bledsoe.
No, that is not.
Two different people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Falk would also need to make that type of transition.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's a good point. As you move into the final tier that you have there, Pete, we've talked a little bit about John Walford, who's a guy you had your eye on from Wake Forest, but there's a couple new additions there.
Yeah, Walford's a guy that some of the people in our audience know. Coach Turner, the guy I've been working with for years, I do my scouting with. He's a guy we just both love, just because we love the way he plays. The problem with Walford is we can't get the data we want in terms of how big he actually is, but he's listed at 6'1", 200. My gut says he's more like 5'11", 198.
Oh, really? Small.
Yeah, so it's just, I think he's probably on the small side, which is the reason I wanted to get him inside my top 10. I just couldn't quite do it. Love the way he plays. He's got some Baker Mayfield in him. He's got a ton of Drew Brees in him.
Got some moxie.
Yeah, I think he'd be a really interesting seventh round or free agent pickup for the Saints. To bring him in and groom him as a backup to Brees or a backup to whoever takes over for Brees. Because I think he could run their offense. And
learn from the master of people his size.
Really good eyes, really good timing, throws a nice, tight, accurate ball. But might be, I'd say he projects as a pretty good NFL backup, but probably nothing more than that, just because of the size. And then the other two guys in that tier, For me, Riley Ferguson is a guy where we were really worried that he wasn't big enough, because a lot of places had Ferguson listed sub 200 pounds going into the combine. And that really turned me off, because, again, you get beat up in this league, and at sub 200, it's just not going to work.
Yep.
But he came into the combine at 212 and 6'2.6. That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's decent size.
So if Ferguson can put on another, say, 5 to 8 pounds, he might be able to do it. And he's a guy who throws a nice ball. He's you know, somewhat athletic. You know, he doesn't have straight line speed, but you know, he ran a sub 7.3 cone. He's got some athleticism to him, and he's got wonderful timing on his passes, and he's accurate. So he's definitely a guy who's got a shot. And then our dark horse candidate, this kid from Texas Tech, who Coach Mybunk just loved, this kid Nick Szymanek. Now look. Not enough film on this kid. We were not able to go and find every single flaw that he must have. He's a guy who got benched his senior year. There's all kinds of reasons to give up on him. But, boy, he is a big, strong kid who throws the snot out of the ball. I mean, he can throw the thing, and he really spins it. So he strikes me as a wonderful seventh-round project, the kind who could actually make it in 2 years.
Yeah.
So to me, he's worth knowing about, just because he's just got so much physical ability.
Before you go,
I mean, he can stand there in the pocket and throw darts.
Before you go further,
50 yards downfield.
If he's like a seventh round project, what's Riley Ferguson? Like that kind of time of the draft as well?
He's probably also a seventh round guy, but not a project.
Yeah.
Like Riley Ferguson's close.
Yep.
He's close to being able to play. Actually, I was talking to a coach yesterday, and I said, you know who Ferguson reminds me of? It's actually Hoyer. He could have a Brian Hoyer career.
He can like a game manager type, because Hoyer can do that.
Yeah, where you know, if all the stars align, he could get a job at some point, do pretty well, and then you know, everybody, hey, this guy's not bad, and then you know, 3 weeks later, this guy stinks. You know, sort of a Fitzpatrick kind of thing.
Yep.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder kind of quarterback.
Gotcha. Yep.
Case Keenum, something like that.
Yep.
You know, he's to me, he's potentially that level of player if he makes it.
Cool.
But you know, we just talked about 12 quarterbacks.
We did. We did.
And I think 9 of them really are very legit.
Have a legit shot,
So this is a good quarterback class. You know, obviously there's so many things that can go wrong. So, I mean, teams ruin players all the time.
Yep.
Players shoot themselves in the foot. Manziel, obviously, the best recent example. Guys who do make it, like Teddy Bridgewater.
Get hurt.
They get whammied in August with some freak injury.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a million and one reasons why these guys still have a long way to go, but I'll tell you what, I can't remember the last time I liked the top six this much.
That's great. It probably goes back to like 83, that great class.
I don't know if it goes that far, but I mean, like when was the last, you know, the Roethlisberger, Eli, Rivers class was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I don't know if this class is that good, But who knows? Maybe.
That there's some depth there. And what Pete and I will do is we'll wrap it all up after the draft when we get to the landing spots and how these guys might project in the places that they get drafted, which is going to be a huge, 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 huge component of all this and making it work or not making it work. And then next week we'll get into the running backs, the tight ends, and the receivers all for you before the draft, right?
Yeah, we're going to be active over the next couple of weeks. We're going to be, hopefully you and I are going to do three pods together next week.
Yep.
I'd say 90%, Elliot, Chris, and I are working on trying to get together next week, so we may have a pod with Elliot, and he's great.
Yep.
And then post-draft, I'm going to do a sit-down with Evan Silva.
Awesome.
And I'm also going to do a sit-down with you. We're going to do landing spots. So a lot of good stuff coming up.
A lot coming. Catch us on Twitter at @Rotobon and @RotobonHacksaw. We'll make sure you know about everything that's coming. And thanks for tuning in. So long, everybody.